This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
From Marketplace, I'm Noelle King, and for David Brancaccio. The Federal Reserve made the call yesterday to keep interest rates at record lows, partly because of concerns over global volatility. For a look at how world markets are reacting this morning, we're joined by Brenda Kelly. She's head analyst at London Capital Group, and she's with us from London. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning.
What's top of mind for traders in Europe today? What are they thinking?
Well, I think markets are trying to really decide whether the lack of action from the Federal Reserve was a good or a bad thing. I do feel at the moment, given European indices falling quite dramatically, it has been seen as a lack of confidence in the US economy. So despite the fact that many central banks have been at pains to comfort market participants that China is not a concern, it is clearly going to be for the next few months, and you would expect that very little can possibly change over the course of the rest of the year to make any difference to monetary policy in the U.S.
Asian markets were mixed today. It was an up day in Shanghai, but the Nikkei was down. What's happening in Asia?
This boils down to a certain amount of confusion as to whether or not we're going to see additional easing from other central banks. Now, the Shanghai Composite is not exactly what I would call a good benchmark for sentiment in the market. It has been exceptionally choppy over the last few months. But the Nikkei in itself, the fact that we did see a pullback in the dollar versus the Japanese yen, and it does actually look like it may actually push that bit lower, is being deemed as something of a negative for the exporters in Japan. So that is why we have seen a drop by 1.96% today. But again, whether or not we'll see additional dovish commentary from the Bank of Japan over the coming months may help to prop that index up.
Brenda Kelly is head analyst at London Capital Group. Thanks so much, Brenda.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Let's take a look at markets in Europe. The FT 100 in London is down 0.2%. The CAC 40 in Paris is down 2%. The DAX in Germany is down 2.17%. Voters in Greece will return to the polls this weekend for the fifth general election in 6 years. The populist Syriza party faces off against the New Democratic Party. The election comes 2 months after Greece promised austerity measures in exchange for a third European bailout. Both parties say they will maintain the terms of the bailout, but James Bevan of CCLA Investments told the BBC Greece's problems aren't over.
If you were to say what's the policy choice between the Conservatives and the left wing, they've both said that they want to stay in the euro. They both want to deal with the challenge that has been set by the lenders, the EU, the ECB and the IMF. Frankly, I think that staying the course and paying the bills is going to be really demanding. And I have to say that I think that the chances of Brexit have now risen rather than fallen.
Voters head to the polls on Sunday. The Emmy Awards are on Sunday, and if you haven't seen all of the nominated shows, you do have a good excuse. There's a whole lot of television out there, courtesy of Netflix and Amazon and cable, and of course, the networks. There are something like 400 scripted shows over the course of a year, which makes it a great time to be a TV fan and an absolutely exhausting time to be a TV critic. Marketplace's Adrian Hill sat down with TV critics Brian Lowry from Variety and Mary McNamara from the LA Times to see how they're holding up. First, here's Brian.
There was a time when you were a critic when you could focus your attention on sort of a part of the year from after Labor Day until Memorial Day. And then there was some opportunity to catch your breath and start sort of focusing and remarshaling your energy and efforts for the fall. That cycle now never ends.
For critics and for people who cover television, there is too much television. It's like, you know, I look at my editor, and when I'm talking to other editors at the paper, I'm like, imagine you're the sports editor, and now suddenly there are 50 new sports, and they each have 50 teams, and you're supposed to cover it with the same amount of people. That is what is happening in television right now.
There are as many shows premiering in June or July, oftentimes, as there are in September, and there's certainly as many premiering in January and February. Because of the binge phenomenon, I will now hear from viewers or readers who are angry if I review a show based on the 3 or 4 or 5 episodes that were made available, saying, well, how can you review something based on the first 4 or 5 without seeing all 12?
I mean, it takes like 2 hours to program my DVR because I had to get one of the ones where, you know, you can tape 15 things, and I have the East Coast feed so I can tape it in 2 times. And so then it's like this whole, okay, well, if I do it, then I don't want to fill up on this time frame and I need to, you know, keep it. It's insane.
There are days where I probably watch 8 or 10 hours of television. And the reason I don't want to do that is, one, because I will look like the Pillsbury Doughboy, and two, because I think you start to reach a point where you're just numb.
I can only watch, I don't know, like 4 hours before without a break. You get this special headache. I mean, there are different headaches. You get the headache from the scripted drama, but then in the documentary. But the worst headache is the one where, like, you have to watch if there's like a news event and you have to watch it continue. There's a headache that I can't even describe.
What I will occasionally do, I will confess, if I get a show, especially where they sent out 4 or 5 episodes, and I see the first 2 and I'm not really digging it, I might watch the 3rd and 4th while I'm writing.
You know, I'm watching it all the time. I'm watching television all the time, which is really great because I have 3 kids. And so when I tell them, stop watching so much TV, you know, it really doesn't have the credibility that it might. It'll rot your brain, except for mine.
That was Variety's Brian Lowry and Mary McNamara from the LA Times. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our online digital producer is Tobin Lowe. Coming to you from studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey, I'm Noelle King with the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.